So let's welcome Jim Altchin to the stage.
So what do you think of Longhorn? Huh? You want to know how to do some of that stuff? That's what my talk is about. And we're going to start with this eye chart. This is going to be up on ComNet right after my talk. It's also going to be on MSDN. Now, during the next 4 days, you're going to have an opportunity talking with some of the best architects to drill down in all the boxes on this slide. And there's more besides what I showed here. What I'm going to do is just focus on the four areas that Bill already mentioned. I'm going to talk about Fundamentals, Avalon, WinFS, and Indigo. And we're going to do what I call a lap around Longhorn to get you, you know, sort of in the roadmap about all how those pieces fit together. And then during the rest of the conference, you're going to be able to drill down into those. Now, if you have all this great functionality, you need a way to be able to interface into it. And we call that WinFX. And what is WinFX? It is the next step beyond Win32. And if you've programmed to the .NET framework, it's going to seem like second nature. It's very well structured. This is something that we expect to last decades, and so we spend a lot of time thinking about how the classes, the types, the methods, the properties, the events all fit together, so it's a holistic environment. Actually, every time that a new extension is put into the system, it's reviewed by a set of system architects, and then it's usability tested by a set of developers. We think we're doing a good job. We're going to be interested in what you provide to us as feedback about this. Of course, another thing that we wanted to do is increase the capability of what you're able to do in your code. And at least for me, the number of lines of code that I can write is about the same. Actually, in my case, a little bit less than what I used to do. But in the last 10 years, I don't think the productivity in terms of number of lines of code has really gone up that much. So what can you do about it? Well, I have a saying. It's the best line of code that you do is the one that you don't have to do. And what we're trying to do in WinFX is bring up that capability so things like add, ref, and release, you don't have to think about. So you can make your code more resilient and write your code faster. Lastly, in this next step in WinFX, we're trying to continue on our commitment to compatibility. So if you have a Win32-bit app or you have a .NET framework app and you want to start taking advantage of some of the extensions that we have in WinFX, you'll be able to do it in a fairly straight-ahead way. Now, I believe in your bags, you will have gotten this chart. This is the namespace chart. And I encourage you to study it because it'll help you understand, especially using Visual Studio, but help you understand how the namespaces fit together. But from all the areas that I'm about to talk about. So now, what I want to do is start the lap. In the fundamentals area, even though we didn't really show any of it in Hillel's demo, he basically just showed the top-level view, Longhorn is really about fundamentals as much as about any of the other areas that we're trying to move ahead. Today, it's still too easy for a driver to confuse other drivers or confuse the operating system. It's still too easy for applications to confuse other applications. And we're spending time trying to create more firewalls, more sandboxing between these applications and drivers so that you have a more resilient environment. It's a big challenge today. Deployment, huge challenge, huge. It's probably the number one I hear following security. And it's not just when you deploy your app, it's how you service your app after the fact, through patching or whatever. And then there's this incredible growing security burden. It's not only in our code, it's in your code. And it's not just looking at the code that's been done today, it's the new changes dealing with digital rights management, because authors are going to want to get compensated as this new evolving world that everything moves to a digital form. They're going to want to be able to ensure that we're doing the right thing. We need people to be able to trust their computers and trust their content. Last, performance is a continual problem. Today, we don't take advantage of the GPU, not except in certain games. And just basically because of memory leaks and the like, it's very easy to have a system that is running for a very long period of time to degrade in performance. Those are some of the challenges that we're trying to address in Longhorn. And how are we doing it? Well, I'm going to talk about each of those areas very quickly. In terms of deployment and servicing, we have a technology that we call Click Once. And Click Once is the ability to just do an X copy, the equivalent of an X copy to a machine, and you've installed it. Very easy to get an app there, very easy to deinstall an app. No reboots. I'm on a campaign to get rid of reboots, not only in our code, but in any of the code. Any of your code. So we have new servicing APIs that we're putting in the system to be able to tell applications. You have a new set of capabilities that you need to integrate in, and at the appropriate time, you should shut down that part of your app and bring in the new piece. This is also true of the operating system. We've made a lot of progress in Windows XP and Windows 2003, but we need to do a lot more. And I could go on and on. Migration. Going from one machine to another. Today, it's a weekend of work if you're at home. We'll have migration from machine to machine, or migration that goes on the same machine, upgrade. It's the same code. And we're not talking about hours. We're going to get it down to where it's in the minutes range. We're not going to demonstrate that today, but that's the progress, and I think it's actually in some of the bits that you'll be getting today. Reliability. I talked about it. Built into Longhorn will be essentially a flight data recorder. It's going to be able to trace on all the time, and if your application has a problem, you'll be able to back up and see what happened. True for the operating system as well. Another area in here that I'm particularly excited about is driver verification. I really want us to take the next step and be able to put an analysis on a driver to ensure that the driver, before you even go through an operational mode of stress testing, you know that the thing is correct. I could go on about other improvements in that space. Performance. We have improvements going on in the paging system, something called SuperFetch. Now, what's SuperFetch? SuperFetch is the idea that we can look at what's going on in a system and in a much smarter, semantic, heuristic way, determine what you're going to need again in the future. And SuperFetch is dramatic in terms of its performance improvements. We're adding a lot of code in Longhorn. And we're going to be able to hold performance once we, you know, work through all the other problems that we've got to work through by the time we ship it. We're going to hopefully hold about the performance we've got today by the fact that we'll have the capabilities such as SuperFetch. Glitch-free. We want to be able to manage a media stream while other things are going on in the system. You want to do some of the beautiful stuff you just saw, you need a glitch-free environment. Full GPU exploitation. The last area in fundamentals I wanted to mention is about security. And frankly, Bill brought up some of the things that we're doing in SP2 and in the near term. In Longhorn, we're going much farther. We're going to basically soup to nuts from the entire life cycle of when you're writing an application. When the system boots, starting, running, communicating securely, building, and then staying secure. So we're spending a lot of time thinking about the fundamentals and going back and seeing what we can do to improve them. A couple I'll highlight here. You really need to be able to communicate effectively between nodes and between people and do it in a secure fashion. We spent a lot of time in the web services area and with protocol specifications such as WS Security. We will continue to ensure that those capabilities are built into the system so that you, as an application developer, you don't have to think about and worry about whether or not your communication is secure. Another area I wanted to highlight, Bill highlighted a little bit, is the way we're trying to work with hardware in a deeper way. The NSCUB, this wonderful acronym that we have, used to be called Palladium, where we're working with the hardware vendors to be able to create a system so that we can boot and ensure that we're booting securely and that we can create shadow memory where code can execute, but you can't debug it. You can if you're actually needed to debug it, but in the running case, the idea is that it's in a curtained memory, which means that it'll be very, very hard to penetrate that. In another case in hardware, we're adding no execute capability to pages in the system. And by that, I mean today's 32-bit processors, until recently, have not had any way in order to lock a page and say there's no execute here. And so with heap data, it could always be corrupted. We'll have a solution to that with the no execute flag as we work with the hardware vendors. There's a lot that we're doing in this space. There is a lot of talk at this conference. I encourage you to go to those sessions and learn how you can write the most secure app that you can. So, next part of the lap, presentation. Now, today, there's basically two models. There's the Windows app, and then there's the web app. And both have great characteristics. If you want to have great interactivity, great performance, if you want to have offline capabilities, if you want to integrate in with things like the start menu, a Windows app is the perfect thing to do. Of course, there are a few downsides of that. If you want to have a great web app, there are great things that you can get out of that. You get, for example, text reflowing very easily. You get the easy deployment. And, of course, you can't put a Windows app in your browser favorites. In other words, it's designed in two separate worlds. What do we think people want? We think they want one world. And it's been a very long path for us to get here, but we're incredibly excited that we think that we're on a path to solve these problems. Now, you saw some of the demonstrations that Hillel did. Those are some of the screenshots from that. What we're doing in Avalon is creating a unified presentation model for Windows apps, for web apps, and for media or animation-type applications. This is a big step forward. We're going to take the best of both worlds and create one programming model that you can count on. Another huge innovation in Avalon is a vector-based compositioning engine. Now, today you have to write, or there is in the system, two hardware drivers. There's a 2D1 and a 3D1. In Longhorn, there's just one. There's just one driver model that you can get access to, whether it be the text, media, any of the capabilities that might have had to switch before. You get better performance because you don't have to switch between the pipelines, between the 2D and the 3D. And this compositive engine works not just, as you saw earlier, not just between an app with the alpha blending that you saw with the transparent windows, not just the app and the operating system, but even between apps because of this cross-process compositive engine. And it's vector-based. Any of you who have tried to play with a high-density screen size, and they're becoming higher density, you'll know that if you did a bitmap-oriented font or bitmap-oriented icons and the like, it basically just doesn't work. So this is all vector-based, which, of course, is also faster. Another area where we're making a huge step forward in Avalon, from our perspective, is native input for a variety of new input means. You've seen Media Center, very cool little guy with a remote control. You can get native input into Avalon from the remote control. How about ink? One standard API for getting ink in. And even speech, we'll be able to have one interface into the system. Now, as you look across here in this diagram, you can see that we're going to let Avalon come in through documents, UI, or media with a common form. And then, as you can see, it gets down to a direct 3D graphic box that you can see there on your right. Now, the last innovation that we're doing we think is huge. It's moving to declarative programming. Now, each time that through the ages, as we've moved from assembler language to C to VB, we've made steps up in the capability of what you can do. Well, declarative is better in a variety of ways. And we are introducing a code named XAML as part of our work in Longhorn. And it's a new markup language that lets you have the ability to build a Windows app in a declarative way. And of course, we all know that declarative things are typically easier to learn, read, and read, learn, and write. We also have the ability with this declarative language to separate the coding from the content and to have some of the rich experiences that we all are used to now on the web. You really have to have incredible designers in addition to incredible programmers. Today, it's sort of all mixed up together. And what XAML does is give us an ability to separate what's called code behind from the designers. And so you can have collaboration between those designers and the developers. And as I mentioned, it's very easy for tools to generate as well as consume declarative text. So in this, on the screen, it shows you what a button would be in XAML. Now the cool thing is that you can use any CLS language as well to generate that same button. So these three snippets of code generate the same type button. Huge step forward. So with that, I want to get down a little bit more, the next level down in the system, and have Don Box and Chris Anderson, Windows architects, come out and do a little programming in Avalon. Chris, Don?
Thanks, Jim. Hillel got to show you a great preview of what Longhorn's going to be like to use it, what it's going to be like for IT professionals and consumers. Well, Don and I, we get to show you what it's going to be like to develop it, what the code's going to look like. So, of course, everything starts in the console, right? All right. Don, let's start a C# file. We're going to start coding our application in C#. Don, you're using Emacs?
Yes.
All right.
Remember, Chris, the premise here is we're walking up to a vanilla Longhorn box. We're looking at what's on everybody's box. I go to my mom's house.
I
want to hack.
Okay, so we're at Don's mom's house.
My mom, the only app she will have installed is Emacs.
Wow.
So this is all I have to rely on.
I don't want to be on your Christmas list. Okay, so we start with some using statements. All the APIs, all the functionality you've seen in Longhorn today are exposed through a simple set of managed APIs. We're going to import the system namespace, the MS Avalon Windows, and Windows.controls namespace. We're going to create a namespace. I'm sure all of you guys are pretty familiar. We're going to keep going here. Create a class. We're going to derive this class from Window. Window is the base type for all the top-level frames in Avalon. There's already people critiquing your coding, Don. It's sad.
There's already what?
People critiquing you. So we're going to create a main.
The font. I hear them. Hold on.
Thank you. We have a solution. We can solve this technical problem. Good?
Hold on. I have one better. Watch this.
Font lock mode. Yeah.
Get rid of that nasty color coding.
Excellent.
The contrast
Excellent.
Is really right. A local thing for me. People in the back, they don't want to see all that fancy color stuff. Because they want to see true systems programming.
Okay. We have a main. Inside of our main, we're going to create a new application. Type. Okay, new My Window. We're going to create this. Now, this is actually instantiating the class. The key thing to remember here is in Longhorn, this isn't creating some wrapper that's underneath the covers calling create window. This is actually instantiating the real code that is going to execute this app. We're going to set some properties, text and visible. Like our forefathers, we are making the default visibility of all windows to be invisible. We're going to run. And Don, I think I need to make you flash back to history. You remember COM?
Yes.
Okay. If you remember COM, I'd like you to put STA thread on the main.
Proving developer continuity on the platform.
Yes, that's why we did it. Developer continuity.
Great.
All right, so let's go to console. We're going to compile this now. We're going to invoke the C-sharp compiler. Now remember, Don said this is only the software on his mom's machine. The C-sharp compiler is now included in the default Windows client installation. Going to include a bunch of new DLLs, make it a Windows executable, and compile.
It's just a warning. Don't be alarmed.
It's fine.
My mom's got these crazy environment variables on her box. I never know what she's doing.
You got to talk to her.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's run the app.
This is it. Drum roll.
Okay. This is the first Longhorn application compiled at the PDC. You'll notice it is not gray. It is now white. That is our improvement. So, Don.
Hold on. Oh, my goodness. Look at all the stuff you can do with this app. This is that Avalon thing you guys have been spending like 3 years on, right?
Yeah, it's that Avalon. Yeah, thanks, Don. Thanks.
All right.
Just wait. All right. So, that command line is not going to satisfy us for the rest of this conference, and we really need to make an improvement here. In Longhorn, we're introducing a new build system, a unified build system that unifies Visual Studio, the platform, and the SDK with a single build format. It's included in the box. It will ship in every Longhorn machine. So, Don.
So, my mom does not have to suffer the tedium of running this command line.
Correct, yeah. It's a consumer, a home feature. So, let's create a proj file. MS Build projects are, of course, XML-based. We're going to start with a project tag. They consist of three main types of tags: properties, tasks, and items. We're going to set some properties. Specifically, we want to have, C-sharp as our language, because we're not going to go change the code right now. We're going to say the target name. Give it, whatever random name Don feels like today. Vanilla, this is great. We'll do chocolate later, but we weren't quite ready for that. In our items, we're going to include all the C-sharp projects, all the C-sharp files, rather. Excellent. Flight in, very tough, very tough. Import. So now we need to get all the tasks. We have properties and items defined, and we're going to get all of our tasks from the Windows application.target file, which is kind of the default makefile.def for everyone. I think we're good. It looks great. Let's go back to the console.
Oh, we don't need that anymore. Instead, I type MS build.
Yes. And what we've done is we've produced a lot more console output. We're trying to increase the amount of console output in this build. So, Don, let's run the next app.
Well, actually, I could run it. There's insects here. There's a bug in our demo already.
No!
As a hardcore Emacs user, there's something I've always wanted, which is that thing that you Visual Studio guys have. What is it? Where you hit the F5 key?
I love F5.
I think I can get that. I think this is an enabling technology here. If I set this to build run.
That's not going to work.
That won't work?
I'll try it. Let's see.
I think it'll work.
We're trying, F5 and Emacs wasn't the top priority here, so. Yes.
F5.
That's it, the second Longhorn app of the conference. And oddly, it still looks like a boring white window.
Yes, but wait till we add some more angle brackets.
Okay, so. All right. Jim talked about that great new declarative programming language, that higher level abstraction over, the vanilla C#, or, well, really vanilla C# now. So what we'd like to do, I want to take that C# file and convert it into XAML. So Don, Maestro, if you would please, a new XAML file. So in XAML, the syntax is relatively straightforward. The root tag is the class you want to derive from. We're going to include the XML namespace, which by the end of this conference you will all have memorized. It is schemas.microsoft.com 2003 XAML. We will repeat over and over again. We're going to include the definition namespace. This lets us do directives to the language compiler. So we're going to say, we're going to use that same class name in the same namespace as the code behind file. Excellent.
So what we're really doing is we have two source files now that are going to generate this. We're defining the type. We're splitting the definition across two files.
Yes.
So that means down here, I have to go and say.
Correct. There's a new WIDBI feature, actually, where you're able to have, in C#, have multiple source files contribute to the same class. In this case, we're using a markup file as one of our sources. So let's move those property sets out of, you know, that rather old school C# and into the new revolution that is XML.
Let's move this code into the 21st century.
Wow. You can't use semicolons in the 21st century?
No. We don't need them anymore. We have angle brackets.
Wow. Huh.
Great.
All right. So the last thing we need to do, we need to tell the project system that we want to compile that. So let's go and open the project file. And we're going to say that we want to include for as pages all the XAML files. That's XAML. Done.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So let's build. Did you change the text?
No.
Is anyone going to know?
No one will know that it's XAML. Hold on. Don't look away.
That was not the third app. No, wait for it. Go to the XAML file. Yes. Oh, this is going to be much better. This will be exciting. And we build and run. Hello, world from XAML. What happened? As we ran the build system, it took the XAML and it converted it into code and resources, and it took the C# file and put those together as we compiled. Now, alas, that is still but a mere reflection of what we want.
Will I ever come back to the source code, or now am I just like XML boy?
Don, you've always been XML boy.
Yes.
We have one other XML boy in the audience. Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
A true believer, if ever there was one.
Let's add some content. So create a close window tag. And inside of here, we want to include a text box and some buttons. While I drink. So we're going to set the width and height. Now, you remember Jim talked about those high DPI monitors? In Windows, we are going to natively support physical measurements, inches, points, pixels. Don, your code is so clean. So we run. Awesome. It's beautiful. Don, you are a URI guru. And everyone can see our patented Jell-O button effect as he clicks. Yes, you get that for free. But Don, your app is sitting there. You're poking the app and it's not
and
doing
nothing's
anything
happening. I'm getting nothing back.
You're getting nothing
back. It's not an interaction. It's not a dialogue between the software and the human.
Okay, let's fix that. So we want to add an event handler. So if you've used ASP.NET, this should come as no surprise. We can also declare the event handlers in the markup. So we're going to add an ID to the text box so we can programmatically access it. And we're going to have a click handler. Pushed. Your names are poetic.
I make code poet. Have you ever seen that think picture with code poet? They named that after me.
Excellent. Fabulous. So we create our event handler object, and it takes a click event args. And inside of here, we're just going to be a little mundane, because we'll get to the exciting stuff in a moment. And we're going to show a message box. So message box show, and we can access Bob.text.
Yeah. The text box was a variable called Bob.
Excellent.
And it has a property called text.
Okay.
Shall we?
Let's do it. So we build. We run. We see a window. Type the text on. We have interactivity. It's a message box. It'll get better. Don't worry. So we have our code and markup separated. We're able to, out of the box, the developer experience on the platform has a simple to program declarative markup. We have this new build system. But the next thing we want to get into is, you know, the app looks pitiful. Hillel's actually in back crying. I can hear him from here.
Yes.
So let's go in and add some little more polish to this. So we're going to put a text box. Jim talked about this unification of UI, documents, and media. And here we can see that we can put rich text right in the middle of our UI flow. In addition, all of Avalon supports a composable layout model. So we're creating a text panel, and that's going to be laid out inside of the window. I'm able to embed really interesting text. Wow. See, we should have rehearsed more of the text Don was going to type. So he's going to put that in. We're going to build. We're going to run. We see text.
Okay. No, we don't. Actually, I can barely see the text, Chris.
Well,
they don't see the text.
I can see it down here. Let's make this a little bigger. Let's make it so everyone can see it. Longhorn in Avalon has this great vector-based drawing system. And, you know, maybe when Jim was saying that, you kind of said, so what? You know, vectors are, you know, all newfangled. They're for games or whatever. I like my bitmaps. But alas, bitmaps 2.3, excellent. Bitmaps don't scale very well. So in Longhorn, we're moving to this composable vector-based graphic system. And so we're just going to scale this up.
Right there.
Right there.
Try it.
And that's going to allow us to just zoom the whole UI. So let's bring it up. Build failed. Don, we have failed for our first time in front of this audience.
No, well, our code has failed. How about that? For the first time. There, would that be better?
That would be much better.
Do you like that attribute
better? I like that much better. I think the compiler will also like that much better. But what we saw was compile time error checking. That was a feature demonstration.
You know, I've been, did you see the Bill thing where they did the behind the technology? You know,
yeah.
One of the characteristic parts of those videos? I think we can actually capture that in Avalon. You have behind the technology in here.
Okay, so.
If I do this, I think that'll get us to look more or less like those interview shots, like with Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Sean Combs.
Excellent, much better. So let's. Does the text box still work?
Of course it does. Hold
now
on.
Now remember,
that was
don't
my
try
faces.
This at home. That's horrible. Anyway, okay. So we've seen text. We've seen graphics. We've seen the rotation and the scale. But the last thing we talked about was media, the ability to integrate media into your application.
There's no blinking lights yet.
Which
is that whole Altair IMSI thing with the blinking lights.
Bingo. Okay. But we want to do a little more modern version of the Altair. So what we want to do is let's add a video into our application. So in Hillel's demo, you saw how he was able to zoom into that video, and it was really easy from a user standpoint. But how hard is that from a developer standpoint? If you've tried this before, of course, you know that you need DirectX, and you probably need to host a Windows Media Player and implement maybe 200 or 300 interfaces to try to host it. But here, we've gotten all that down to one single tag with a lot of attributes on it. So we set the width, we set the height, we tell it to stretch, we repeat for a really long time, and we set the source. The last thing we're going
to
do is we're going
to
layer the video behind the text. We want to show a really great integration where they're seamless. So we're going to add this canvas, and now we should be able to build and run. And let's see. What does the future hold? Clouds! Let's resize.
You know, now that I have these newfound graphical skills, I now feel like I should critique this the way many of us critique other artwork produced by Microsoft. I think it's a little harsh, a little Fisher-Price, if you will. Too much primary color.
It's really hard to read the text.
Not enough subtlety. We need more pastels.
Okay, let's go for pastels. Let's. The future is not harsh and Lego-like. It's more pastels and friendly. And so, in here, what we're going to do is we're going to set the opacity on that video. Every element supports opacity. The entire Avalon composition system is built from the ground up with the ability to apply a transform, an opacity transform, effectively to everything. In addition, every color reference, you remember the RGB, but it was always stored in a quad. You always had that fourth bit. We found a use for that bit. And we've packed in alpha into that bit. So every place you use a color, you can specify an opacacity.
Which is the leftmost thing.
The leftmost, yes. So
no.
Oh, sorry.
The leftmost.
Leftmost. Stage right. or stage, yeah. Okay, let's go. Video, notice it's playing behind the text box. And it's stretching. And we can type, and the button actually works. All of this running at frame at the video refresh frame rate, doing real-time alpha composition. In the bits, this is running, by the way, in the directly on the video card. We've moved all of that processing directly onto the GPU, so it's consuming very few CPU cycles.
So they, and this is also running on just the vanilla PDC bits.
Yes.
Eventually, at some point, who knows
at
when.
At some point in the future, you'll
the
be
attendees
able to see
will actually be able to reproduce this exercise themselves.
So what we've seen is that great vector-based compositing engine with composition, media, UI, and documents all running together that even Don can write a great-looking application on. Even you.
Yes.
All right. With that, I think we should turn it back to Jim?
We've gone way too long without a senior executive on this stage.
We need a senior executive. Is there a senior executive in the house? Excellent.
So I said earlier, no trade-offs. I think you can see, even though these aren't some of our best graphic designers here, that you really don't have to have trade-offs like you've had in the past. I want to move into storage, the next piece of our lap around Longhorn. Today, data is generally trapped inside the application. What's happened is the semantic aspects of the data are often put not only because there has to be a separate store, but they're wired into the procedure code that's inside the application. What does this mean? Well, in some cases, it's not a big deal because you really don't need to export it. But if you really want to export it and let other people take advantage of it, the fact that the schema isn't visible means that other applications can't go and add interesting value to it. We also find that developers have to create their own store all the time because, you know, the file system today, it does streams. It does streams really well, but you might want to have very small items that you manipulate. So we find application developers creating their own stores to try to manage their particular data. We also find that relationships can often be buried. And if I say something like, let's do a meeting, and you know immediately that there's going to be an agenda, maybe not at Microsoft, but in most companies, but there's going to be an agenda and you want to know when the time of the meeting is going to be and who it's going to be with, so you know all that. And so you want those the system to understand those links and be able to present them. Or if I say Bill Gates or William Gates, you know that I'm talking about the same person. The system could have better semantic knowledge to make those links very visible. And the last area that we think is a huge challenge, and you've already seen demonstrated how we're addressing it, is that if you want to have separate views today in the system, you have to create your own folders. If you have photos, you can create it by date, you know, 2001, 2002, 2003, and you can look at them that way, and it's great. But now let's suppose that you want to look at your photos based on perhaps the vacations you went on. You'd have to go in and physically reorganize. There's no logical versus physical separation. And on this screen, it shows the little people, little funny people, representing that today contacts are sort of buried in a whole bunch of different places. When you put an author on a document, is that the same, you know, namespace of contacts as in the instant messaging system? Which is that the same one that's in email? Well, we think that's a problem because we think that if you had APIs that exposed it and let you manipulate it, you could do a lot of cool things. So what we're trying to do in WinFS is do a couple things. First, schematize the data and provide a great store that you could use if you decide to. So really two separate concepts. We think that moving ahead in schema is going to be a great step, whether that data is, in our case, an Active Directory or someplace else. And we also think the store will let you do very exciting applications. So we have extensible XML schemas. We have a set built into the system, things like people, user, infrastructure, and you can add extensibility into those XML schemas for those particular ones. For example, if you have a specific attribute that you want to add on to a user, then you could do that. You can also, if you notice on the far right, that you can add your own huge new data types where your application can install the schemas and then your application can take advantage of it. We have logical views, which gives you this separation between the physical and the logical views, so you can look at the data in lots of interesting ways. Programmatic relationships, again, you've already seen the things that we're doing in Hillel's demo in the app where it let us look at the different data, the linkages between them, and you can program those so you can surface them through a variety number of applications. Synchronization is today extremely difficult, whether it's PC to PC or PC to a web service or PC to a device. And so we've spent a great deal of time. So if you store your data in WinFS, we'll be able to move it around in a consistent way between the devices without you having to do a significant amount of work. Now, lastly, that when data changes today, you can get things like an on-change notify. You know something changed, but then you have to go grovel to figure out what in the world happened. We have something called information agents that'll let you run specific pieces of code when things happen. If I get an email from somebody that it's really important, I could have an information agent rule that looks at that and says, it's from such and such a person. I want to go ahead and send me an IM that goes to my phone. So an incredibly big step ahead in terms of storage. In terms of the general architecture, some of the things I want to highlight in this chart, and hopefully you can see this one, is that there's lots of different programming interfaces that you can come into WinFS with. You can come into it through objects. You can come into it through a SQL. You can come in through it through an XML interface. There's a whole set of services being provided by the system, such as synchronization I've already mentioned, an information agent, built-in schemas. And then beneath it, there's a data model that lets us build up these great schemas above it, things like items and relationship and extensions. This is built on a transacted NTFS system. So the streams that you have in WinFS are actually stored in NTFS. Of course, WinFS itself is stored as a stream in NTFS. So it's a very good synergy between these. So with that, I want to ask Chris and Don to continue on and take us around the lab with WinFS.
Thanks, Jim.
Great.
Actually, Jim, this is my first PDC since joining the firm. And I've sat out there all these years, and this is like my seventh or eighth PDC in my life, and I've always wondered, why doesn't the executive write some code? And I think it would be... nothing would please me more. I would be honored if you wouldn't mind being my code monkey for this leg of the lab.
It depends. You have like a good editor on here?
Well, as you know, we have Emacs. If you were watching backstage, you know, we have God's editor, I think.
How about Vi?
Let's see what we have. Why don't you bring up the editor of your choice? You know, Windows is a big tent. We love everybody here, so you use what you want to use. We're going to edit vanilla.cs, which was the source file we were just working on. Now, you'll notice that unlike Emacs, VI doesn't retain the font settings.
Woo!
And they want at least that. Yeah, that's good. So you just told us about WinFS. I'd like to see some WinFS coding. The first thing we're going to need to do is, why don't we talk about how people work, right? That we saw that there's this unification of people in the store. Why don't we bring up a contact picker dialog and see what that looks like? So replace my message box, which it looks like you've already done, and make yourself a contact picker dialog. So contact picker dialog, give it a variable name, whatever you feel like, equals new contact picker dialog. Great. And we're going to need to set a property so that the dialog knows that we're looking for contacts explicitly. So why don't we go ahead and say dialog, that was a request property. Request properties.
Property request.
Property request.
I think it's property request.
Excellent. We agree. You lose.
Jim, I could be wrong. I just work there.
Type what you will. We'll work it out.
The compiler will probably help us out. What do you think?
And we need to set the property type.
So this is because the contact picker has all that great functionality. You can select multiple items, right? You can say addresses or email names or properties, anything.
Chris, you're sugarcoating it. It's a very verbose API that we have to code around. Contact property type dot contact.
Woo!
That I am certain in the fullness of time, this line of code will become unnecessary. But for now, this is the real bit, so
we have to live with
there's
the real
a couple
bits.
Of warts.
Yeah.
Unlike Avalon, where everything's perfect.
It right? is. You saw it. Yes.
Guys, let's move on.
Sorry.
So, Jim, would you go ahead and show the dialogue? So do a show dialogue, which will do a modal dialogue on this sucker. Pass your object reference there. Compare it to dialogue result.ok. And if and only if this works, what we want to do is grab the selected contact, which is a property on the dialogue. So
is this the thing you call Bob?
Yeah, the edit control is Bob, of course.
Sick.
Yes.
We've been trying to teach Don Hungarian, but he just refuses to learn.
Yeah, I thought now that Charles isn't with the company anymore, we could pick our own variable names. Anyway.
My screen went blank. Okay.
So, selected contact sub-zero, dot contact, dot display name, dot value, dot string, dot text. Oh, I'm sorry, it got a little carried away. That's looking pretty good. Do we have enough closed curlies there?
One more.
I think you got the exact right numbers. Now, hold on, Jim. Let me channel a much younger Don before I became enlightened. Will you hit escape colon W?
You're right.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Sweet. So
these young people.
Can we go back to the shell? Now, I don't know if you noticed, what I did when I wrote the original make the project file, I went ahead and put the build run in the default target. So
I saw that.
We now have F5 for both Emacs and for VI. So if you want to just write MS build.
Look at this.
And go ahead and click the button.
Everyone tilt a little bit.
I should have removed that rotate stuff. All right.
Fantastic. So why don't we go ahead and find in contacts.
It's thinking.
It's thinking for a
it's
while.
It's thinking. These are real bits. Remember that.
Yeah. I picked Mr. Anderson. Great. Fantastic. Okay, VI boy, let's see what else you can do with this thing. Let's see how this VI works with XML, a more modern syntax. So why don't you crank open the vanilla dots with an A? Vanilla with an A? I use the French spelling. So what we're going to do is let's add some more user interface goop at the bottom of this form. So after that, go ahead and put in a line break element so that we get a visual.
Because we want to make it look better.
We want to make it look better.
Yes, line break.
And let's see, let's get a button in the list box. So a button, we're going to have an event handler, which is going to be the button event handler is click equals whatever. Search.
Good name.
And
you like that?
Yeah, I like that.
Close that's angle good. Bracket.
Your UI is a little better than Don's. It actually has good variable names. You code a little better. You've been doing this longer.
He's more experienced. He's more seasoned, as we say.
We call it old.
And let's go ahead and drop a list box in here. And you're going to need to give it a programmatic variable. So capital ID equals the variable name of your choice. You're not going to say LB list. Oh, well. In honor of Charles. And you're going to need to make that a string with quotes. Result list. And, you're going to get all visual fancy with this VI thing. Fine. You go, girlfriend. Whatever you want. That's amazing. Look at that. The visual acuity. Oh, my God. And why don't we put in a dummy item in there so that it comes up looking fairly reasonable? Because as it turns out, if we don't,
It's a size to content world.
It's a size to content world, and we get a very tiny little list box.
Like that.
So close that sucker off. List item. It's looking beautiful. Close off the list box. What do you think of this XML stuff, Jim? You like this XML stuff?
I don't think it's going to blow over.
You don't think it's going to blow over?
I think it's here to stay.
I think it's here to stay. I'll quote you on that.
That makes Don happy. We can keep him employed now.
Great. That was actually one of my review goals, to get a VP to, or a group VP even, which is even better. So that XAML looks as good as XAML can possibly look. Why don't we go ahead and go back to our source file?
Oops. And
just need a second, Al. You're all good.
Did you overwrite our vanilla dot?
No, I think it's just two L's. Two L's and vanilla. Again, the French spelling.
There is an undo.
Yes. So, you, as I recall, in the button, you declared a event handler called search. So, would you mind writing a new event handler next to push?
I think we should get that WinFS namespace, isn't it, right?
I think so too.
Yeah. So we'll need system.storage, and because that's not core enough for us, we need system.storage.core.
That is truly the core of the core.
It is the
Uber
core.
Yes.
Or no, the
We were gonna have Core EX, but we decided, we'll wait till next version.
Yeah. Didn't make the lappy design look.
No, did not.
So go ahead and write us an event handler search object, sender, comma, click event args, or E.
Jim knows the guidelines. It's sender, comma, E.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. That's
okay. Great. And let's see inside of here. What we're gonna do is issue a query. So there's some documents on this machine. I'd like to see what we've got available. So to make a query in WinFS, the most important thing we need is this thing called an item context, which is really a query scope. But before we do that, let's make sure because the query might take a few moments, let's clear out the list box so the user knows what's going on.
Yep.
And now we're going to declare an item context, C, and we're going to get it by saying itemContext.open.
So this is kind of the master control object, right? This is where we're going to issue all of our queries.
Or it's the context. Right, remember the international sign for context?
That's context?
Yes.
Okay.
From com. This is a com.
Oh, this is a com context? Okay.
So now that we've got this.
Thanks.
We're going to issue.
Wow. Our careers are looking shorter and shorter.
Yes. I work with these guys.
So when we issue the query, because we're in CLR land where things are very productive and developer friendly, the query is going to return a collection. So we'll do a for each.
Yes.
And we're going to get back documents.
Well, this is a strongly typed object, right?
Yeah, it is.
So we've schematized all that common data stuff, all the everyday information?
Yeah.
Excellent.
So let the man type. Come on. So we'll do a c.findAll type of document. That's exactly the number of...
One more print. I think one more will do it.
Yeah, I like that number.
Yeah.
And so let's get a block of code after that. So for each one of these guys, what we're going to do is create a new list box item. So we say resultList.items.add. resultList.items.add. There we go. Cool. And the title of the document will come from D. And there's a property called title.
Excellent.
And we're cooking with gas there. You close off another curly brace, and that VI is just an amazing tool.
VIs are pretty productive.
Yes.
We should think.
What do you think?
So why don't we go back to the shell and do a build?
Oh, I forgot that rotate.
So there's our new button and our list box.
Should I push
search.
It? Whoa.
Again, it's thinking.
Hey, what do you think?
Wow. Now, Jim, I noticed that we got everything. In fact, we got so much of everything, we got two of everything. It was so happy to cough up these items. Is there any way we can pare this down without going through and, in my for loop, trimming these things out? I mean, I remember from SQL, it was always better if you get the engine to do something.
Yeah. In fact, this is about as inefficient as you can do it, because we're dragging everything we can, and then we could do a compare if we wanted to. Maybe we should just let the engine do the search.
I would love to see us do that.
I think we should let the engine do the search.
Good.
So So let's go to our find all. Find all is overloaded. The first version that we used simply takes a type predicate, which says find all things in the store that are affiliated with this type. And the type we used was document. What we're going to do now is put in a predicate which allows us to actually reason about and express constraints against the schema of what is stored in the store. So the second parameter to find all is going to be a query string. And authors.displayName equals Mr. Anderson. Looks good. And if you can just put a comma, be right after the type of document.
Oh, of course.
Ah, the dreaded line wrap. Oh, that insert. Was that an I
there?
Did
you do
the
mode?
I did.
Yes. All right. Sweet, sweet, sweet. So
what do you think?
That's looking as good as it can possibly look. Why don't we go back, save it out, go to the shell.
Dare we?
Oh, I forgot to rotate again.
Hit the search
button.
I'll
send the memo.
And I'll bet we get a few less files this time around.
How about that? Great.
Great. Jim, before we move on to the next part, I don't know if you watched that video with the Halo stuff, with the red and blue and all that. One of the challenges of PDC is to get a vice president, even better, a group vice president, such as yourself, to say developer 37 times. Would you please say developer 37 times?
Developer, 37 times.
Thank you.
Oh, gosh. What can I say? Okay. We're on to the next part of the lap around, which is about communications. And I think we've made a big step ahead in web services. Now, we've spent a lot of time working with the industry to come up with the specifications and the protocols. But if you really want to have a web service today, you're going to have to do a lot of work. It's a lot more than just coding up some simple SOAP messages. You need security. You need to handle things like transactioning, the guarantee that you handle the resiliency and recovery. You need to be able to handle the trust and issues of security that cross boundaries between companies. You have a decision to make. Are you going to do objects? And there's some advantages there and some disadvantages. Are you going to do services? And some advantages and disadvantages there. And how are you going to deal with the fact that you might want to do this little peer thing that you saw here, but you also might want to do this cross-company or cross just your enterprise? So there's a lot of code you have to do if you want it to take place today. So what we're doing in Indigo is creating a subsystem that you can access that does everything for you. It starts by addressing the basics so that you can do transacted messages in a reliable way, that you've got security built in it. You've got heterogeneous interoperability also built in it. The messaging capabilities so that you can do just very, very simple things like send a message, or you can get down really low level and dirty and be able to play with exactly how the sequencing is to work. Now, there's programming models that extend the existing models that you're used to, whether it be what's available in COM Plus or the like, so it naturally fits into that, or MSMQ, fits into all of those environments. And the bottom line is just simplifies the building of services in a fairly dramatic way. And if you can see this picture, of course, it's not quite as big from the architecture, but from the top, we start off and we have facilities for you to create services so you don't have to do much thinking. You can even do a lot in declarative statements to let you build these services. If you go to the next level down in the architecture, there are connectors and channels for you to, and ports for you to be able to, you know, fine-tune the way you want the system to operate. Finally, beneath that, you have a variety of hosting environments that you can have these applications run in. You could have them run in a web context. You could have them run as an NT service. You could have them run in a DLL host in the COM Plus world. You could have them run in an XE. So there's a lot of different ways that you can have your application and still be able to service the messages and not handle all the issues that you typically would have to about scheduling threads and the synchronization characteristics. So that's what Indigo is about. And with that, I think I want to cover one more thing before I have these guys come back up here. We talk about Indigo for communications. There's also a collaboration piece that we put underneath the Indigo name. And today, in the collaboration space, there are way too many contacts for you to deal with them if you want to have a RTC communications. It's just tremendously confusing. There's no single API for really doing the peer-to-peer or enterprise-level environments that you want when you set up an app to do to real-time. And today, you can't get any of our UI to really integrate in with your application. Let's suppose you want to do a video call inside your application. There aren't any controls that we're making available for you. So that's a big problem. And then the problem of NATs and firewalls, both enterprise and in with the home, block so much of communications that you're really stuck with some hard problems if you want to have a guaranteed end-to-end real-time communications environment. So what we're trying to do in this space is create a single namespace and environment for contacts so that you can find the contacts and you can get the presence. Presence meaning, is the person there right now? And in Longhorn, as you'll see in the bits, that there is a single concept of contacts that everyone is using, whether real-time or things like email. And we are adding controls so that you can get the capabilities for doing collaboration up into your app without you doing all the code. Single platform, peer-to-peer and enterprise, and it's easy to traverse namespaces, even the peer-to-peer ones that are being dynamic. And if you move from a peer-to-peer into the enterprise, then that still works with the same APIs that would have worked on the simple case. And now, back to you, Don and Chris.
Thank you, Jim. So I've decided this time maybe I'd have someone who's a little less seasoned, who I could push around a little bit more. So Chris, would you mind coding? And I don't even want to think about what text editor you're going to use. So what we're going to do now is take our program, which is a fairly lonely program. It's a program that just sits all by itself. And what we're going to do is allow it to reach out to other programs that are running out in the world. So what I want to do is, let's go ahead and do some blog work, right? So, you know, the pdcbloggers.net, everybody's into weblogs now. I know your simplegeek.com is becoming a cottage industry, generating, you know, three or four times your salary just in.
Click-through. Google, yes. Click-through.
So why don't we go ahead and add some blogging capabilities using Indigo with this little program. Excellent. So what we're going to do is, would you mind opening the XAML file? Because we're going to have to set up a little bit of user interface. So what I'd like you to do is after or before, actually, I don't care where you put it, I'm going to need three edit controls, so three text boxes, and a button. So that looks like as good a place as any. So I'd like a text box, ID equals, we're going to put the title of our blog entry here.
Title, you said?
Yes.
Is that close enough to Hungarian? It's the.
Yeah, good point. And do you want to make the width 100%?
A percentage?
Yes.
Don, you've been listening when I've been talking to you, haven't you?
What, did you just say something? Sorry. What's interesting is that was actually spontaneous when I did that.
It's shocking.
Yet it got no laugh. Sad.
Don't try.
So go ahead and mark up these variables. So we've got three variables. And you might want to put a little label there so other users who come along can
usability.
See what's going on.
I'm a big fan.
Programs that other people use are often more useful than programs that only you use. Put a line break at the end. Oh, my goodness. Where's your BlackBerry and Macintosh? Great.
Need
a button. We need a button.
A button.
That will actually invoke the blogging code that we're going to write in Indigo. So we have a button. Invoke the blogging code. Fine. Close off that tag.
Working on it.
And go ahead and put a click handler in there. Blog it. Fantastic. So we've done all the XAML work. And now what we need to do is go over to our program and write some Indigo code. So first thing we're going to do is get the event handler in place. And the event handler looks astonishingly similar to every other event handler.
If anyone in the audience would like to help out, you can.
Great.
We're additioning later.
And what we're going to do is bring in system.messagebus. which is the namespace for Indigo. And we're going to take those three edit controls, bundle them into a data structure, and send them over through a SOAP message to my blog.
A data structure?
We call those classes. Is that what you're... Okay, fine. So public data class data item. And I'm going to need three public fields of type string, title, description.
Wait, wait. Title? I'm guessing description?
Dude, you are Great. So good. Yes.
Content.
Content. Fantastic. So we've got a data structure, also known as a class, that we're going to work with. Will you quickly marshal that off of the form into...
Now, I really should be using data binding. There's some people backstage who are going to yell at me because I'm not.
That's okay.
There's great data binding in Avalon, just letting you guys know.
Yeah, yeah. Plug away.
My monitor's gone blank. That's not
That's
very
okay.
fun.
I dot description equals the title dot.
Actually, it would be the description.
The description dot text. Thank you, Chris.
It's harder to read when I have to look down at that
great.
Monitor.
So while Chris fills this up, the thing we're going to do next, which is actually the important Indigo piece, this was actually just a bunch of bootstrapping code so we could get our app to work. What we're going to do now is declare a port. A port is the central focal point in the API for Indigo.
A port is also a great kind of wine.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And the port is the way messages come into and leave a given app domain. And so I've got my port set up. What I'm going to do now is create a channel. Actually, I'm going to do a port.open, so p.open.
I think we should also close it at some point.
Yes, let's close it.
Practicing good coding practices.
Good for you.
And you taught me well.
Yes, thanks. Yes. So what we're going to do now is create a channel. So Indigo is all about ports, which are these places in network space, and channels, which are these little I/O devices we use to get messages into and out of a port. So we're going to need a send channel, and we're going to call p.createSendChannel. And open paren, new URI, colon, HTTP, colon, whack, whack, www.got.net, whack team, whack dbox, whack indiepost.asp. Cool. Close, 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 semicolon, and now... We've got a channel, so we're ready. We're poised to get the message out to this service.
I'm poised.
Yes, you are poised. What we're going to do now is create a new message. So we're going to create a message object, m equals new message. We're going to give it an action URI, and get ready for this, UUID colon, 0000-0812-0000-0000-C000-10 zeros and a 46.
Don, so you've made that up off the top of your head.
No, my friends on the Excel team really wanted to see their name in lights. So, go ahead and pass I as the body of the message. So we're basically creating an in-memory SOAP envelope. Did you pass I as the second parameter? Oh, that was just too fast for me. So we've got a channel.
I'm very, very sneaky.
We've got a message. If only we could actually show me what you want to type.
I just want to introduce them together. I really want that to be the code that I have to type.
Yes. And of course, this is real bits. This is not the final product. There is a grotesque line of code I need to type. I would like everyone to look down or away from the screens while Chris types this. Look away. This will not be in the final product. It is a horrible hack. m.encoding equals new ASMX encoding. And by the way, this has got nothing to do with ASMX. This has to do with the way our plumbing dispatches messages. And system.text.encoding.UTF-8. Close paren, semicolon. Do not do diddly squat. Go to my blog. Go to the shell. Go to our not there. Get rid of that. What are you? Go to the shell that we've got. The one we're running.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, please do a start http colon whack whack www.got.net /dbox and fine. So let's go take a look at my blog. This is just the blog which any of you folks in the room can.
You have a Sunday at PDC postmortem.
This is the thing I blogged at 3 a.m. this morning, yes, before I went to bed. And what I'd like to do is blog something new. So yes. Why don't you go ahead and build and run our app? MS build.
F5 for Visual Slick Edit as well.
That MS build is a very enabling
You know what? I'm sorry. Jim has been sending me mail all day about this, and so I got to fix this.
Great. So Chris is going to tweak the UI a little bit.
There we go.
For Indigo, we want things to look perfect.
Yes. There we go.
So why don't you go ahead and exercise your creativity? You have wanton access to my blog. Please be gentle with her. Chris is the best demo god in the world. Yeah. I only wish I could be that cool. You're right, Chris. I do. Now, before you hit the button, moment of silence.
A hush.
Hush falls across the room. Go ahead and hit it.
I don't want to think about the number of moving parts in this demonstration. Across the internet.
While this button remains depressed for a moment or two.
It's sad.
Oh, it came back. Why don't you go hit refresh in your web browser? That was great, Chris. So we've seen a classic scenario where there's some service running on the internet. We've got security built in. We're using Indigo. We're doing the dance. I think Indigo is actually a lot more interesting than just talking to things that are websites. What I'd like to do now is use that same technology to build some funky UI that will make me feel better about Avalon.
Excellent. I'd like to make you feel better about Avalon.
And you know, I've noticed something about you. We've been spending time together recently. Oh. And I've noticed that you have tendencies which you're fighting. That you've been somewhat in denial for the past few years. And I think today is the day we come to terms. And it's often, you know,
don't say it. They can't handle it.
Yes. I think the next piece of code should be written using the language you really know in your heart of hearts you want to use. The language that you knew from the age of 5 you were attracted to, even though you couldn't explain it. So what Chris is going to do is create a tile. A tile is one of those fancy gadgets over on the left-hand side of the shelf. And we've got a new tile project. Have you already created the project?
It's thinking. It's done.
Great. So we're going to create a tile project. What we're going to do is comment out the text of the tile. And you might want to bump up the font size.
Hey, this is way better than those text editors we've been using. There's IntelliSense and statement completion.
There might be something there.
There's something to this Visual Studio thing.
There might be a future in this VS thing. And give it a variable. Great. So that's okay, fine, be creative, whatever. Fantastic. Chop, 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 take me to the code.
Okay.
Fantastic. What we're going to do is write a service. We're going to write an Indigo service that runs inside the taskbar. And to do that, we're going to write a new class inside of our class that we've got here already. Oh, and we're going to bring in System.MessageBus, of course.
I like System.MessageBus. It's one of my new favorite namespaces.
I know it is. So go ahead and declare a new class. So public class MyService. And it's going to inherit from SyncMessageHandler, which is a type in MessageBus. And oh, wow, look at that.
It's built in the body.
Oh, that's pretty excellent.
I actually am pretty attracted to this language. It's pretty cute.
Yes.
I like it.
I wonder if I could do both. Yes. So why don't we go ahead, and what we're going to do is this message is going to be a little bit simpler than the message we used before. We're just going to put a string in the body. So declare a string, and I want you to go ahead and crack that out of the message. So even though the message is in XML, it's 100% SOAP conformant, what we're going to do is just program against it as if it's an object, because it's easier in this case. So we do a message.content.getObject. This gives me a reference to the content. I then ask it to be coerced to string, and then there's some VB magic syntax to make the cast work.
It's a cast.
Yes.
Welcome to the new world.
I am getting used to it rapidly.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Now, we've got the string. Again, this is one of these, the code I would like to write.
Well, first we've got
a new class. That class doesn't have any reference to the foreground. So why don't we declare a field of type tile foreground. And we'll set that up later on. We don't have to worry about that yet.
Okay.
What we really want to do is the tile dot the text.
That's statement completion against the markup as well.
That we haven't built.
That we have, yeah. Well, I did build it, actually. So.
Yeah, great. Cool. And what we're going to do, what we want to do is just assign it S. Now, this is the ideal world we wish we lived in. Today, what we're going to have to do to get this to work is a little magic. So what we're going to do is put that code into a function that takes an object as a parameter and returns an object as a result. And we're also going to have to, do we have to return null or nothing or?
We do. We don't, well, VB takes care of that for us.
Okay, great. So is that all you need to do in the function? We need to cast the string. So we'll pass the string in through that parameter. Fantastic.
I need to remember to put commas in the right place.
Yeah, great. Fantastic. Okay. So now what we need to do, this is, again, a line of code. Don't take too seriously, but it's needed to make this demo work against the live bits. So look away from the screen. We're going to call context.beginInvoke. What this does is it takes the context that our thread, which is not the user interface thread. This is a service in Indigo. The incoming message will be dispatched on an arbitrary thread. What we need to do in this build of Longhorn is flip from that arbitrary thread to the thread that has user interface access. And to do that, we do context.beginInvoke, passing it the delegate of the code we actually want to run.
Yeah. So this is also VB doing multi-threaded programming with nested types, talking through Indigo across any protocol.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good, too.
Yeah, that is also nice. Fantastic. So
Chris, it's a great service.
That code's looking good.
It is.
Did we give it a good name?
We gave it the name of my service, which I think is a great name.
Great. Let's go ahead and wire it up. So what we're going to do is create a new port. This is Indigo. So we create a port. That's where all life begins in Indigo. And this time, what we're going to do is pass a constructor, which is the URI, that we're going to listen on. And I don't really want this thing to be accessible across the internet. I only want it to be accessible on my local box. So Indigo ships with a variety of transports. One of them has the ms.soap, or cope, .xproc.
And you were complaining about the other APIs?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Colon. And then put in an identifier of your choice here. Why not, an identifier. Great. So we've got our port. Before we open the port, we need to wire up our service as a receive channel, or on a receive channel. So go ahead and say make your service, initialize it, and then go ahead and do port dot p dot receive channel dot handler equals s, and now release the hounds. Do a p dot open, and at this point, all kinds of stuff's going to happen in my app domain.
Oh, but watch this. Everyone pay close attention here. I'm going to now install the tile.
Okay.
Well, let's hope I get the right one. So inside the build environment, inside Visual Studio, it automatically registered that with Sidebar, so I didn't have to do anything extra.
That's a very nice productivity enhancement.
It's a productivity enhancer.
Yes, great. So why don't we go modify our client to take advantage of this? So we'll just use the existing XAML. This is the last piece of code we're going to write, so we're going to just start ripping.
Oh, I'm just going to start tearing this apart,
man. Yeah, get rid of that stuff. That looks, change the URI.
Okay.
To point to the real one that we just typed in, which is ms.soap.xproc, an identifier. Very good. We'll be living with that identifier for a while.
Can we use the same UUID?
No, actually, I'd like you to change the first eight digits very quickly.
Okay, first eight digits.
0000000. Yeah, so eight zeros. Great.
Okay.
This is in honor of the tune we do, Like an Eye Unknown, in the band. And pass a string, which we'll get from the bob.txt, and nuke that onerous, horrible line.
Gone.
And you're cooking with gas, dude.
Fabulous.
Good. Please go build. Have we had any demos tank that just didn't work at all?
Not so anyone would know.
So I think, since this is our last demonstration, it would be okay if it tanked.
Okay, if
so
it doesn't
let's
work,
set expectations low, and then if it works,
you all must be accepting of that.
So in the pink box, type something. Yeah, of course, literal boy. And then go ahead and say, push me, I'm clean.
Actually, I'm going to hit the invoke blogging code, which actually is the one that does it.
Argument, null exception.
I know what the failure is. I knew about this one before, and I have failed you, Don. I have caused the only demo that tanked. I've always wondered what it like to have your demo fail in front of, you know, 7,000 or how many thousands of people are here.
Yes.
And now I truly know.
So you're going to fix it in real time?
I am going to fix it in real time. So the error, for those of you who'd like to know, is that I am still woefully inadequate in my ability to use my language that I love truly. And I missed
yes.
to pass the data to the background thread.
Ah.
It's all
so you
data.
Still haven't come to terms. You were conflicted. Great.
Okay, chop chop. Let's make this one happen in a successful way. Okay. Or I could say that was my attempt to show people that... All right. It's not coming up.
Really?
And I know why. See, we have this... Remember these improc... The ports, right? So we have a port that's dangling, and you never want to have a dangling port. But because we have that dangling port, I'm going to make a minor little change.
Ah.
And we're gonna fix this. I can recover because I've paid attention in school, and I know how to make this work.
So what happened was something wedged. We left a transport port open, so we need to go change the identifier, which is why the toolbar, the taskbar, was blowing.
Okay, so we have our hello PDC.
It shows.
Okay.
Now, Chris, just do it.
Okay. Please work. Yes!
My brother.
My brother. Oh.
So
cross-process. So that didn't use IIS. Nothing.
No IIS. No nothing. Very fast. Very lightweight.
Great.
Very cheap. This feels like a reasonable time, Jim. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah. And not too bad for whippersnappers, huh? Well, I've got a hard decision to make. We've got some incredible demos that we're about to go into, but we've already kept you here a long time. Would you like to just stand for a few minutes? Or keep going. We're going on. The next thing that we are going to cover is how apps can take advantage of the great system that you just saw. And we have been out working with a set of partners, both from the commercial side, corporate developers, and web developers, to see how they might take advantage of some of the great stuff that you're seeing. So we're going to have Adobe, Merck, and Amazon come up and show, and we're going to show what they're working on. And the first demo is going to be from Adobe. And you know they're a premier graphics design company. And you know most people aren't building in Notepad, Vi, Emacs, Slick Edit. They have to use something very, very high end. And I think Greg Gilley is here with his team. It's going to come out and give us a little demonstration of how they're going to take advantage of Longhorn. Hey, Greg.
Thanks. Thanks, Jim. So I assume everybody's familiar with Photoshop, right? So Adobe also has professional video tools. One of them is Adobe After Effects. After Effects is used for motion graphics, compositing, and special effects. It gets used in films and commercials and things like that. Any place that you really want to add sizzle to your presentation. So let me run a little quick video here to show you an example of some of the things that After Effects can do. So pretty cool stuff, and as we've been talking with Microsoft, and as they were showing us some of the capabilities of Avalon and the WinFX stuff, we were thinking, what if you could use a tool like this to design your user interface for your application? So we decided we'd sit down and try and see what we can do. So we've got Len, who's a UI designer, and Chris, who's our coder. They're going to come out and show you a little example of what might be possible.
All right. Thanks, Greg. So as a designer sitting down to build a new application for Windows today, if I wanted to find UI, I have very few options. The way I do it today is I sit down with a static imaging editing program, maybe like Photoshop, and I create a bitmap of what I want to produce. It's a really manual process. I take that bitmap, and the first thing I do is print it out and hand it to my friend Chris. And as a developer, he's got to sit down and try to recreate what I've done. In the ideal world, I'd like to be able to use the tools that I know how to use as a designer, like After Effects from Adobe. And what you're seeing on screen here is After Effects 6.0 with a plugin that we've written that exports to XAML. So what I've got here on screen is actually some UI, which we use After Effects for, like Greg showed you, is to build motion graphics and special effects. So what you can see, this is sort of a motion graphic effect like you'd see for a stock chart on an evening news program, right, showing stock data coming in, except you'll notice it's not complete. What it is actually is not just a video that I'm saving out, but a template for UI. The way I might do this in today's world is to build a video, put the data in there as a fixed value, and then just save it out to something like Windows Media Format. Now, once that's done, it's fixed. I can't change it. What I've done here is created the charts, the animation. I've put in some parameters here for Chris to use later. And now I can save this out. Instead of as a video that's fixed in time, I can save it as a piece of UI and give it to Chris. And he could go do something like bind it to a web service to get real-time data. So what I'm going to do is save that, go over to Export, export it to XAML, put it in a directory where Chris can pick it up. I'm going to go ahead and write over this. And now that it's done, Chris can take over and add some logic to this and build some code on top of my UI. So let's see what you can do, Chris.
Thank you, Len. So the first thing as a developer is Len and I spoke and we decided on a class name. And I went ahead and I built a project. You can see that I had a dummy file for the XAML file that Len has created in After Effects and delivered to me. First thing I'm going to do is load in his file and rebuild the application that I was working on just to make sure that Len gave me what we discussed. As you can see here, it's come up. The animation loads. It looks beautiful. The fidelity is almost exactly what you have in After Effects, except for some of the metadata that Len had in there, which soon I'll be binding to a web service. Additionally, you can see some elements that I added across the bottom. There's a portfolio and a news button and a little text edit field for symbol lookup. So let's go ahead and add some event handlers that will actually bind this to the web service and make this animation dynamic and interactive. So the first one we're going to add is just the loaded handler. I've already gone ahead and written some of the code to handle this, but that will go ahead and bind us to the web service and get the data dynamically. The second one I'm going to add is an onSelectionChanged handler for the list box. And what this will do is this will allow us to handle changes in the list box and repopulate the data from the web service. So I'm going to go ahead and start this again. Once again, this is just the XAML that I got from Len. I did not have to go into Notepad and re-edit this. And you can see now we have data that we've pulled from the web service running live on this machine. This stock data.
It's pretty cool, huh?
And in addition to that, we have this list box down here, where you can select different ones, and once again, the animation starts over. You can see more data has been pulled off the server. But this is still XAML. So not only did I not have to code the XAML, which I'm very happy about, but I get to take advantage of properties inherent in XAML, such as the fact that it's resolution independent, it's vector-based. I can lay it back out, and it has relayout built into it for me automatically. So regardless of what this runs on, by Len and I working together, we've created this excellent UI, and I didn't have to code any XAML.
Wow, that's impressive.
Thanks, guys. So you can see that's a great example of the kind of user interfaces that you can create inside of Avalon. And the nice thing is there wasn't any Emacs involved. And if I can make one final plea, so I know there's a lot of desktop app guys out there, and I know you guys probably already have UI designers that help you with it, but for you enterprise app guys, could you please hire UI designers and take advantage of some of these new capabilities? Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Avalon, it's fabulous. The problem that often happens today to that prevents a huge step up in the productivity is the fact that doing things across organizations and with different systems that exist in different organizations, it's virtually impossible. So if you really want to have huge jumps for any of the business apps, you really have to do something that's sort of different. And we have Merck here, who's going to give you an idea of how they're approaching a big jump ahead using Indigo. So Jim Carcana, yes, is here, I think, with his team, and is going to give you an idea of what his group is going to be able to do. Except he's coming from over here. Hey, Jim.
Happy to be here. Well, as you've heard, I'm Jim Carcanas. I head operations for part of Merck. And what operations means is we basically solve problems that we encounter in the business of clinical trials. Now, you may know already that clinical trials is a complex business. It's complex for a lot of reasons. Some of the inherent reasons are that it's research, and discovering the unknown is sort of inherently a difficult task, as you can understand. But there are other factors that contribute to this. For example, clinical trials, just one clinical trial, one piece of a clinical trial, would involve as many people as would fill this room. So you can imagine how many interactions you need to take into account. And as a developer, if you're going to build a system to handle that or an application to handle that, you can appreciate that that's a challenging task. So how might you approach that? We're going to suggest that information management is the key here, and focusing on the information itself from a supply chain standpoint and working it into the workflow of the folks involved, the patients in the trials, the physicians taking care of those patients, the regulatory agencies, the hospitals that are involved, allowing them to work in a way that's natural for them and allows us to collect the data at the same time is a much easier way to implement such a system. So obviously Indigo is an opportunity to connect all these things together, and we'll show you how what we mean by that. I thought we'd take the opportunity to put together a demo that talks about a hypothetical clinical trial. This will be an allergy study, and we'll just show you a few of the participants that would normally be encountered in such a thing. This is Rich Gleason, who's going to be playing the part of a physician taking care of patients in the trial. Jim King, who will be playing the part of a clinical monitor managing the data in the trial. And Jim, if you wouldn't mind being the patient in the trial.
I'm still breathing.
Okay, great. We'll get you set up and we'll come back to you. So let's talk about how you might deploy a system. I just finished telling you that we don't think that you can achieve a solution here by approaching it from a classical direction. So how do you even get the software to the people that need to use it? And we'll show you that. I'll turn it over to Rich, who will walk us through one-click installs.
Great. So the first step as the physician for this trial is I need to get the software installed onto my desktop. And we're going to do the one-click Longhorn deployment. I'm going to click on my study site initiation. And this is going to pull down the client to my desktop. So now, instead of the old world of just having a web page, I have a full, rich client that's going to allow me to participate with this trial. Now, the next step is I need to add a patient to my study. I need to add Jim here. So I'm going to select patient. And you're going to see the Longhorn contact picker, but customized for my application. So this is showing me my contacts that qualify for the study, of which I've got Jim. So using the Longhorn identity system, I have his contact, and I can trust that I know who he is, and I'm going to add him to my study. Got my little lock showing I've got a trust. And I also now have a pathway for data to Jim. So let's see how he's doing. Let's check his real-time readings. And I should start taking data from him. There you go.
Thank goodness.
So that's pretty cool. What you're seeing here is real-time data coming from Jim. He's holding a device here, as you can see. This is a measurement device from QRS Diagnostic, and it connects to an IPAC. And you remember I said, let's try and create an environment that allows the patient or the participants in the trial to work in the way that is natural to them. This is an allergy trial, so we need to collect data on pulse oxygenation, respiratory function, and we could ask Jim to go to a hospital or schedule a visit with a physician, but instead allow him to work at home, for example, and collect data on his terms. This is wirelessly communicating with a PC. It could be in his home. The data is traversing NAT gateways, a whole host of intermediate servers, making it in real time to the physician's office. And the applications developed along the way don't need to know the details of that, and Indigo helps to bridge that environment. So the data is looking pretty good on these screens here. You should be seeing the real-time data. Let's create an anomaly that we need to handle. So, Jim, if you wouldn't mind, just take a shallow breath into that tube. And I'll explain that, of course, Merck needs to make sure that we understand what's going on at all times in our trials to maintain maximum safety and efficacy of our products. So the physician is being notified of an anomalous event, and he's going to start a collaboration session with Merck to talk about this data, and you'll see how Indigo bridges a disconnected environment in that case. I'll turn it over to Jim King, who will walk us through that.
Thanks, Jim. As Jim said, I'm playing the part of the Merck clinical monitor, so I'm going to receive a notification. You just saw it pop up on the screen there, and that's from the physician indicating that there's something to investigate. So I'm going to go ahead. Looks like he's sending me data. Let's see what we're actually looking for. We're going to go to real time. And remember, that data was sent. I wasn't connected. Now I'm looking for that cue to respond and feed me all that data. You see it all catching up right here, and I didn't have to do anything but go ahead and click on it.
Thank you.
Also, there's an anomaly noted here. So clearly that's what he wants me to look at. So we're going to go ahead and do a little bit more work. And again, we're going to make use of some of the features that are available here, specifically Avalon for the visualization, and then we're going to use Indigo again to make another web service call and really do some more drilling into this. You see, there's three patients here that look like they share the same anomaly. You've got a threshold here that they all fall below, so we're going to drill into these three patients. And I'm going to use a web service call out the map point to pull all this together, so I've got data coming from many different places, from a patient to a physician back into my office. And right off the bat, I'm able to draw an initial conclusion by looking at the geographic proximity of these three patients. They're all in a cluster here, and MapPoint allowed me to do that. But that doesn't tell me enough, so we're going to drill into a little bit more and overlay the pollen count. Or for all of us, maybe smoke would be a little bit more appropriate, everything we're dealing with. But we're going to overlay the pollen count. Let's see what happens. Almost immediately, we see that everybody's in the pollen zone who had the anomalous event, so we can draw an initial conclusion. To make it more compelling and understand if there's a temporal aspect here, let's roll back the clock. And again, we're going to use the feature of Avalon. Notice the alpha blending of the overlay and the data binding that we're able to do as I roll this back. That's pretty powerful stuff right there. So we roll it back. We're able to draw an initial conclusion and say that it looks like the data that was sent to me indicates that the anomalies are definitely pollen-related, and I can collaborate with the physician on that information.
Thanks a lot, Jim. That's awesome. So you can see, let's review what we've seen here. We have a multitude of systems involved, connected here, all with applications written without regard to the infrastructure. Indigo helps to map all that together. We're getting the right information to the right people in the right time frame, and we are working with the IT barriers that are created as a function of all the different systems that are in existence as a result of this large population that we have to deal with in clinical trials, much like what other large businesses are faced with in today's world. So we encourage you to talk with us more about this. There's a booth to visit, the Indigo booth, and the Partner Pavilion. But now Don Box will be talking about the code and walking us through some of that. Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Yeah, we're going to have Don come out. He's back here someplace. He's just going to give you a little bit of snippet of exactly how the Indigo code worked.
Thanks, Jim. Let's take a look at this machine here. Let me minimize all these fancy windows. Here's some code. What I'd like to do is take a quick glance at the code that made that Merck program work. I'm going to open up a simple C# file, which was already written. This uses Indigo, as we've said already. This one actually uses a different part of Indigo than we used in the lab. In the lab, we were programming at the low-level messaging layer. This uses the more higher-order service model. And notice that we simply write a class. We mark it with dialogue port type. What dialogue port type says is, I expect arbitrary messages to come in and go out. It's not a strict request-reply discipline. And notice also that I was able to annotate methods with a variety of attributes to control what the contract was between the service and the consumer. And in this case, not only was I able to control the shape of the messages and the message exchange pattern, I was also able to declaratively say, here are the security requirements I need, in this case pointing to a blob of config XML, which controls the concrete details of the security, as well as a logical role name, which I'm going to use for standard authorization of incoming messages.
You did it all with just those few lines of code?
With just those few lines of code.
Fantastic. Thanks.
Thanks.
So you've now seen two of the demonstrations. I want to do another one with Amazon that ties it all together. I'm going to show what can be done in an application using Avalon, how it can be used in store information in WinFS and get new views out of that, and then finally how to use Indigo for the web services. Al Vermeulen is here from Amazon. Al, want to come out and show us cool stuff? Great.
All right, thanks, Jim. All right, how are y'all doing? Are you starting to see kind of the possibilities of what you'll be able to build with Longhorn and Avalon and Indigo and these things? You starting to kind of get excited about this stuff? Or are you just at the point now where you've had a couple of cups of coffee and some water and been sitting there for 3 hours? And and the reason I ask if you're getting excited about it is what I'm doing here is that we got together with some folks from Microsoft and some folks from Amazon, maybe a month or so ago, just to talk a little bit about what we're doing at our respective companies. The Microsoft folks, they told us about Longhorn, a lot of the things that we're seeing here. And at Amazon, we told them about our web services strategy. Okay? And our web services strategy is really pretty simple. What it really comes down to is take all of the elements of our e-commerce platform that you all know and love through interacting with our website. I assume everybody here has bought stuff on Amazon.com. If you haven't, we run this website. You can go there and buy stuff. I encourage you to go for it. Our web services strategy is to take all of that functionality, all of that data, all the algorithms that we've developed over the last 7 years, and expose them to applications via web services. That's it. Pretty simple. Pretty straightforward. When we got together with the Microsoft people, we started thinking, how is it that we can create innovative new things using Avalon and WinFS, these rich client technologies, to create interesting shopping experiences for our customers? What kind of things can we do by combining Amazon Web Services and Longhorn? And we came up with all kinds of ideas. Unfortunately, I only have a few minutes, so I'm just going to sort of show you a couple of those ideas. And what I'll do first is fire up the Amazon Rich Shopping application. This is just a demonstration that we put together. And you can see right away, just as we fire this up, that this is not your normal HTML web page, right? We've got some video happening here. That's kind of cool. We've got this shopping cart control, so you can sort of check out what's in your shopping cart at any time without having to go and actually change to a different web page. That's kind of neat. This is something interesting here. You've got recommendations, and the recommendations are actually cycling through, right? One of the things that we know at Amazon is that material that we put, we call this above the fold, stuff near the top of a web page, is much more likely to convert. That is, people are more likely to click on it than stuff below the web page. So some clever person here said, we can use that space above the fold and rotate some recommendations through it. Now, why would a developer do this? One of the things about our web services that's really kind of interesting is that developers who build things on Amazon Web Services actually have a bit of an economic model that they can leverage. Okay? This is an important thing we do with our web services. The model goes like this. If you write an application and you distribute it out to folks and they use that application to buy things on Amazon.com, then via our associates program, we give you a piece of the action. So you get a cut. And there's actually a lot of people who built things on web services that are making, a reasonable living at it. So that's kind of cool. Let's actually use this thing now to buy something. So I'm going to do a search for digital camera. It turns out that my wife this weekend has gone to visit her sister. Her sister just had a child, and when your sister has a child, you have to go and visit her. The other thing you have to do is you have to take your camera because you can't have too many pictures of a four-month-old baby. So that left me without a camera, and I got to thinking, I really ought to have two because I'd love to be able to take pictures of all of you fine people. And so we'll go ahead and search for digital camera. What's happened while I was talking is that the application, this rich shopping application, has hit Amazon's web services, asked for digital camera, and then gone and retrieved all of the rich information we have about 300 cameras that matched that search criteria. It took all of that rich information and stuck it into WinFS so that we could have Avalon controls that could then, you know, quickly and easily go ahead and search through that information and find things. If I was Don Box, I'd actually in real time build this app and show you just how easy it is to do this. But I am not Don Box. So we can go ahead and we can do things like filtering operations. Let's say we're only interested in cameras that are really kind of well-liked by our customers that got, say, 4 stars or better, and we've cut down from several hundred cameras down to 31. That's kind of fun. We can sort by brand. Let me reset this. We can sort by brand. Let's say we're interested in, we can sort by brand, just ask for, say, Canon cameras and Vivitar cameras. So that's kind of neat. We can do some basic sort of filtering things here. We can get detail information on any camera. And you notice the detail information, this camera doesn't have any reviews. The detail information includes reviews and price and all kinds of stuff like that. And that's great. Let's see, does this one have reviews? Oh, I've picked 2 cameras without reviews. That's okay. And here we go. This one actually has reviews, so you can see that I was telling the truth when I said there was additional information about all of these products that's available. Now, to buy this, again, we'll just do a nice, simple graphical metaphor. We'll grab this thing, and we'll just drag it over here into the shopping cart. There we go. And we've got a shopping cart now. That's kind of fun. And now to check out, all we have to do is push the button. One of the things I want to point out here is that all of this stuff is real. Okay, this is all real code. So Amazon Web Services, this all works today. You can go home and write these kind of applications on top of the Amazon platform, and you can use the Longhorn bits once they're available to actually build this kind of UI. So that's very cool. We can go ahead and change things about our shipping options, and let's actually place that order. And the reason, this is the one thing actually that was dummied up in this demo, is the demo doesn't actually place real orders. Otherwise, I'd own a lot of cameras by now. And you know the nice thing about that, when I buy that camera? Buying things from Amazon makes you happy. So just, it's a great thing. Okay, so that's one thing we can do. We can have a nice, rich client shopping experience. What else can we do? We like I said, we came up with a lot of things. The other one I'm going to show to you right now involves a calendar control. And this is the idea that at Amazon we have lots of products that release all the time. And it's a big deal to people to know when do products release. So we can go ahead and get that data, again, from Amazon Web Services and display it on this nice calendar control. And you can see that David Bowie album came out on the 21st. My family's already bought the 2 things at the top of this week, the Indiana Jones and the David Bowie, and we'll be buying the 2 Towers as soon as it comes out. My son's just a huge Lord of the Rings fan. So this is kind of nice. What I really would like to do, though, is see how this fits in with my personal life, if I'll have time to buy, to actually watch these movies and so on. So I can overlay my calendar on top of this calendar. What's interesting about this, you heard Jim talk about this already, it used to be very difficult to get at my calendar information because it was buried somewhere in Outlook or in Exchange or something. I don't know, it was hidden way down there. And there's probably a lot of people in this crowd who are smart enough to know how to get that stuff out and dig it out of there and put it on this page, but it's difficult for mere mortals. Well, with WinFS, it's easy because that data is exposed. It's really interesting to think about the Amazon information you're seeing here, because really our web services strategy is the same thing. All of the Amazon data used to be buried behind a website. It was hard to get at. What we've done with web services is make it easy to get at. Right? So now we can take this easy data to get at from Amazon, the nice data from WinFS, and put it together in this one control. So that's great. I can see them at the PDC this week. This is something else that was made up. I'm not really going to Hawaii. It'd be nice. But this is actually true. This is really true. November the 2nd is my mom's birthday. And I look at this and I go, this is terrible because it's Monday. My mom's birthday's on Sunday and I haven't bought her anything. This is actually literally true. I've known about her birthday for a while and I still haven't bought her anything. The reason we know this is mom's birthday is because in Avalon we have information about all of my friends and family. We go ahead and we look there and we see that there's birthday information. So we know this is an actual birthday of a friend of mine. We can build functionality into the app, which we've done, to go through and purchase a gift for my mom. So we'll go and we'll purchase a gift for my mom. What we've done now is we've hit Amazon.com Web Services and gotten a hold of my mom's wish list. And this actually is my mom's wish list, just to show that this is real stuff. And you can see my mom likes quilting, unlike Don Box's mom, who installs Emacs and, you know, probably owns all the O'Reilly books. It turns out that my mom quilts and listens to Elton John. So I can go ahead and I think I'll buy her the Elton John CD. And again, I wish the ordering thing was actually hooked up here, because I've done this several times now and I still haven't bought my mom a present. So we'll go ahead and drop that in. And again, you know, I'll go ahead and buy this. I can add a few more things. I can put a message into my mom for her birthday. So that's a good idea. So I'll write my mom just a little note. Okay, that's cool. And it knows it's a birthday gift, so it's automatically set it up with, it's automatically set up gift wrapping. I can turn that off, but I actually want gift wrapping for my mom. It knows I'm buying something for my mom's birthday, so you notice that the people picker, the contact address, has already set this up automatically to ship to my mom. That's great. If I wanted to, I could fire up the people picker and go ahead and change that, or I could change it and have it build somewhere else. That's great. Standard shipping will be fine because her birthday's in 5 days. So we're all set. We'll go ahead and place that order. And there we go. Now, you know, if this was actually hooked up at the end to do the order, my mom would have her her gift. So that's cool. The last thing I want to show you. Thank you. The last thing I'm just going to touch on very briefly, and that's to show that this whole environment could be integrated. And what we've done is over here in order status, as I'm placing these orders, I go ahead and I drop them into my sidebar. Something really interesting we've discovered about our customers at Amazon is that they love to see what's happening with the stuff they've ordered. And I'll bet you've done this too, right? People love to track their order. They love to know that UPS has picked it up in Fernley, Nevada, and it's now going down whatever interstate, and it's getting dropped off here, and so on. So what we're imagining that we could do here, and this is not real yet, we haven't built this. What we're imagining we could do is, with a notification service, we can actually be sending notifications via web services, and a client, like an Avalon client, could receive those notifications and sort of show you in real time where your order is going. So that's kind of neat. So this is what I want to talk about, was the rich client experience. So in closing, let me just again mention that this was, you know, except for the very last part, all real stuff built on Amazon Web Services. We've released, I believe there's been something over 35,000 developers who are currently using web services, built lots of cool applications, lots of orders coming through that. Through that channel. If you want to learn more, I think we have a booth set up here, and we'll have somebody there to man it, and you can come and talk to them. I encourage you to download the software and play with it. Thank you very much.
All the underlying code that you've seen is all real. Think about it. It's not that way in some other events. And nothing crashed. It's not that way in other events, too. Longhorn is a truly a milestone event. For Microsoft, who was in sort of the receiving end of not moving fast enough to the internet, you know, we pay attention and try to get a lead on as many things as we possibly can. We think that this is an area where if you invest early and get with the train and learn, then you can receive some disproportionate share of the gains that will take place. We've got a lot of technology. We're also going to invest to help you make money in deeper ways than what we have before. Typically, we try to push marketing. We push the product out there, get you a lot of what we would call sockets for your applications. We're going to go beyond that this time. We don't have this all worked out, but some of the things that I wanted to mention at this event was that we've done some system design reviews, some early reviews of this with developers, and they keep saying, how about helping us out on licensing? How about putting an automated system in there so you could license your product if you're a commercial vendor? That is something that we are going to do. Now, we have continued to work on that technology, so we will have a facility for you to be able to license your product and do it at scale if you want to, in whatever licensing models that you want to use. But the infrastructure would be in place. That's one thing. Second thing is that we have a very, very, very simple Windows catalog today. think about as taking it to a whole nother level where you will be able to have your products and be able to take from end to end, and we will push those out to people so that they can see the best Windows Longhorn applications. And of course, there will be more coming. We will make this a tremendously large event. In terms of, you know, how do you get there? If you have a Win32-bit app today, barring security issues and the like, those applications should be able to run on Longhorn. If you're working with the .NET framework today, those applications would work on Longhorn, and you're on your way to the WinFX APIs. If you have a Win32-bit app or a .NET framework app, you can start taking advantage of the WinFX APIs. And perhaps you can't rewrite your code to manage. It's okay. Just start using the functionality in the system that you need for your application, whatever it would be. We've designed the system specifically for that purpose. And then finally, if you're writing a new application and it's in the Longhorn time frame, then you could take advantage of the full WinFX environment. Now, we don't have WinFX APIs today, certainly in the bits that we're going to give out here, that cover the entire system. But it should be very clear, that's the path that we're on, to basically make that the new layer, surface area for the system. In terms of schedule, this is only the client. Obviously, there's separate schedules for server. Still's got the same general technology in the server, but I'm only going to give the client schedule. Quickly, the media center just shipped. The Longhorn developer preview, that's the bits that we're going to provide to you today. In first half of 2004, there'll be a service pack for Windows XP and a new update of the tablet, which has dramatically better recognition capability, as well as several other very, very nice facilities. In the summertime and second half of the year, we'll be coming out with a 64-bit edition for AMD, as well as the Longhorn Beta 1. Beta 1 will be where we take it to the next level and ask a lot more people besides you. I mean, honestly, we've shown Longhorn to no one before today, just a few set of people like the ISVs here to get their feedback. We will be going bigger with there. We're not going to make other commitments about when we're going to get done with this product. We're going to try to focus on getting to beta. See, you'll have a pretty good idea with the bits about where we're at. We still have a long ways to go. We are listening. We have a show net here called ComNet. There's an application that if you already haven't downloaded, I propose that you do that. Give us feedback. I know there's been already a bunch of information coming. I was walking, you know, backstage looking at some of the information. It's great. It's a great way for you to get with your peers. It's a great way to tell us what's going on. We are listening, and we're very invested in your success. There's a set of things that we think you should do. This would be what we would call our call to action. They're very straight ahead. We think fundamentals are really important. We together have to nail the security infrastructure so that people can trust these systems. Web services, it's the way to get great interop. Managed code, it's the way to avoid errant pointers, get higher productivity. Smart clients, you want high interactive, rich experience, you need to take advantage of those. And help us be better in community. We're trying to really work on that, as you'll see with the application we've got here, and all of the people that are into blogs and other things. We are really trying to connect with you, and that's what this conference is about. Now, you get the bits today. In fact, as you go to lunch, you're going to be able to get the bits. If you should have gotten a card, which is in your conference bag. There's a lot of information on these bits. There are two CDs just of Longhorn in different versions, a 32-bit version, 64-bit, both of IE64 as well as AMD64. We also talk about that as X64. There's the Longhorn driver kit along with the SDK. There's Visual Studio, the WIDBI version, Yukon, the SQL, newest update of that. There's the Virtual PC 2004 version. Now, That's a virtual machine technology that does actually work with these Longhorn bits, and there's lots of white papers and samples and other things. Now, I want to set the context for where we are in this release. We still are very early. We've never shared bits this early. So you're going to see a lot of warts. There's things in terms of the programming model that we haven't cleaned up yet. Performance is not good. I mean, there's no other way to talk about it. Performance is not good yet. You should put it on only high-end machines. And I propose that you not put it on any production machine. And I propose that you not connect it, at least not knowingly, to the internet, in the sense of it's fine if you put on the internet connection firewall, which should be on by default in Lite, but you should be thinking. You should know that these are early bits. We think it's incredibly cool, and we hope it's what you need in order to get really familiar with the system and provide us that feedback that we want. We're incredibly excited about it. We think it is the next generation. And with that, I want to thank you. Have a good lunch and great conference. Thank you very much.